Today on CityCast Denver. History Colorado is changing. In the past few years, our state's leading historical institution has made a real effort to diversify their staff, experiment with new technology and techniques, and broaden their view on what Colorado history is worth remembering. Today, we are excited to take you inside that effort, courtesy of Dexter Nelson II, History Colorado's new Associate Curator of African American History and Cultural Heritage. He's been working on a big new project, the launch of a History Colorado app, which includes an interactive tour of the state that they're calling the Black History Trail. It's got new oral histories and new research and stories that I haven't even heard before. So today, please enjoy something a little different from us. It's a tale from History Colorado's new Black History Trail, a story teetering on the brink of being forgotten, but now will be fully recognized as part of our state's identity. It's the story of the Dry. Today is Thursday, September 22nd, 2022. I'm Bree Davies, and this is CityCast Denver.
Is it ready to go?
Yes, there, yep.
Okay.
We're good.
Good, we'll get started. Perfect.
Dexter Nelson II, welcome to CityCast Denver.
Thanks for having me today. Pleasure to be here.
How did you initially encounter this story of the Dry?
Well, when I first got here for this project of the History Colorado app, I just started doing lots of research and trying to figure out things I didn't know. And of course, Deerfield popped up pretty early on my radar. But in Deerfield's time period is about 1910 to the 1940s. So then when I heard about the Dry, I was like, well, that's really interesting. You know, how come one is so prominently, you know, talked about and the other one isn't? And then kind of digging more into it, then I met Alice McDonald, who's currently one of the last living local residents of the Dry. She's really the gatekeeper of the story, and she's been doing an excellent job of preserving it.
So we'll just start off by talking about your names, saying and spelling your first and last name. So if you'd like to go first.
I'm Alice McDonald.
And she just really opened up her heart and her home and said, like, hey, you know, here's my family story. Here's what we did.
A-L-I-C-E.
And here's what was done.
M-C-D-O-N-A-L-D.
It's just, there's been so much time and since the Dust Bowl, the Great Depression, there have been a few instances of vandalism to where right now the Dry, if you go there, it's not that impressive, right? It's just a lot of, like, flat land.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it used to be a thriving, you know, thriving community that, you know, at time had, you know, a couple hundred families there. You know, it's not Deerfield. It's not Lincoln Hills in Gilpin County. It's the Dry. It's its own separate story that needs to be told about Black farmers in southern Colorado. It really starts with two Black women, Josephine and Lenora Rucker. They're two sisters. Some of the details are a little murky because they're lost to history, but essentially these two sisters and George W. Swink went into this business venture. George Swink, he was the first mayor of Rocky Ford. He did a lot with politics, obviously being mayor. He also did a lot in the field of irrigation. And so that was one of the, you know, the kind of deals they made where George Swink would work to get more irrigation to this dry area of Manzanola, you know, which would later become the Dry. And then Josephine and Lenora went out to actually recruit people.
And so they went around the country and talked to people and visited with people and encouraged the Blacks to move to Colorado under the Homestead Act.
And they went as far as, you know, Kansas and Oklahoma trying to get people excited to come to Colorado.
And my mother's mother was a teacher, and she was at a meeting, and they were there talking to the people, told them about Colorado, so they decided they would come.
You have to, you know, think about their perspective, how these were African Americans, you know, shortly after the Civil War here in American history, and trying to find opportunity, trying to find advancement, right? Trying to get their piece of the American dream. And that's where we see this opportunity to have land, right? Because we know you have to have land, you know, land equals power, right? And so you have, you know, this almost second migration of African Americans following the Rucker sisters to come to Colorado in hopes of homesteading, having their own land, improving it, and then having that be their own.
And so they went along in their wagon pulled by their horses until they went over a rise and they stopped and looked. And my mother said you could see for 100 miles, nothing but flat prairie, no trees, cactus. And as they looked around, not even any wildlife. They didn't see a rabbit or a bird. I remember mother saying when they arrived here at Mansanola Way, her father saw a man at the Highline Ditch, and he was dipping water and putting it into barrels on his wagon. And so he asked him how to get to the dry. And the man looked at him and he said, "You know, mister," he said, "you don't want to come here. You don't want to stay here."
I don't think it was as lush as they thought it was going to be. Again, that's the name. It's very dry, dry, flat land.
And she said she actually cried because it just was not what she had thought they would find at all.
But to me, that really speaks to the tenacity of these farmers. Because instead of just looking at the land and saying, "Oh, it's dry, we were lied to," and then leaving, right? They stuck it out. They said, "Well, let's still try to farm here, right? Let's do dry land farming. Let's raise cattle."
And I think that that was probably the feeling that so many of the homesteaders had, but they were here and they decided, well, we'll make the best of it.
Remind me again, who is Alice?
Yeah, so Alice, she is the daughter of Roland and Harvey Craig Sr. And yeah, she grew up in the dry. This is what we love to see in the museum field, right? Like a primary source, not someone who's saying, "Oh, I heard this story and this," but she lived it. And so in one oral history, is actually the one that I conducted with Alice. You know, she talks about having to go and fetch water for the cows or for, you know, for everything you need water for. Whereas her, you know, her children, they have, you know, memories of going there and playing or making fly swatters and, you know, whimsical kid things, where she's like, "No, like I was hauling buckets of water." And so it's just like
she was surviving. Yeah,
exactly. So it's just a very different experience. And the fact that it's so well hidden, even though, you know, a few different organizations have done efforts to try to, you know, retell this story. But it's like, at the end of the day, we say, "Hey, go talk to Alice," because it's Alice's story. You know, it's great.
I want to ask about racism in the dry.
There was Ku Klux Klan in this area, and of course Colorado has always been full of the Klan members. Mm-hmm. They had a Klan group here. One night my father had gone into town and was coming home, and his little old car broke down. And so he knew all the farmers in the valley, so he thought, "Well, I'll stop and I'll walk over here to and see if someone will help me." Well, when he got to a couple of houses, there was no one at home. So he said, "Well, I'll just leave it there and I'll walk home and I'll come back in the morning and get the car." So he started walking home, and as he walked, he could see a glow in the sky, and he thought, "That's odd." And it wasn't the moon, but he kept on walking. And when he reached a distance there, he saw a group of men on horseback and in their robes and their hoods. And so one of the fellows rode up to him and he said, "Harv, is that you?" And Dad said, "Yeah." And he said, "What's the matter?" And he said, "Oh, my car broke down." And he said, "I went to a couple of you fellows' houses. There was nobody at home." And he said, "Oh, we're out here having a little meeting. Where's your car?" And he said, "It's down by so-and-so's house." And he said, "Well," he said, "I can't help you right now because we're having this meeting." But he said, "Go ahead on home." And he said, "Don't just stay, and tomorrow I'll come and pick you up and bring you down and we'll fix your car and get you going again." So it was a good relationship. They were all working and trying to survive. And racism was not a problem at all.
And again, that just speaks to, I think, to the hardships of just the times back then of a farming community, because they need each other. You know, it wasn't so much black or white. It was who can help us reach this goal. And so that's just, again, another, you know, optimistic picture that we want to highlight, too, as part of this whole narrative. So already, right, it's flipping two things on its head. It's flipping the idea that African-Americans weren't in Colorado or haven't done significant things in Colorado. And second, we have a story of Klansmen helping a black farmer in, you know, the early 1900s. So things like that, that's just really, it's a really unique story.
Winding through the canyon, her anticipation rose. Monarch Casino Resort Spa, the epitome of mountain chic. Her pulse raced as she sat down at a high-limit Baccarat table. Hungry? She chose the Southwest Fusion flavors of Bistro Mariposa before ascending to Bliss, a top-rated spa Monarch, for a signature massage treatment. She slept well in her luxurious hotel room, fulfilled by her stay. Write your own story at monarchblackhawk.com.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-GAMBLER.
And this gentleman that they worked with, Swink, he's a white guy, right?
Yes, he is a white man. And so it's interesting, you know, there's some stories about, you know, there was some irrigation in the dry at one point in time, enough so that people could do, you know, more normalized farming. But then, you know, dried up, the Dust Bowl. So, you know, obviously there's a lack of communication there, and no irrigation was ever put in. So it seems like that part of the deal never came to fruition.
So after the people came and they settled, why, they worked along with Swink, and they put in an irrigation system on their Pishapaw at the headwaters. And with their horses and their teams and their shovels and by hand, they put in canals and built a dam. And that was probably in 1923 that they finished this dam.
And there's some stories of some irrigation. Like, I won't say that, you know, it never had water, right? There's been some oral histories of people watching the wheat field, you know, being flooded and being irrigated, but also, you know, dams breaking and then them not being repaired, just drought in general, just lack of rain, things like that, that made it really difficult. So the fact that, you know, some of these families were there for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years even, is really quite remarkable. It's a great example of just black excellence, where they saw the challenge and then they decided to step up to that challenge.
That was the shortcoming of homesteading out there. They didn't, there wasn't enough water. They did have an irrigation system. Old man Swink from Rocky Ford, he built five lakes out on that area and was going to run the water from the Pishapaw River west there, going toward Waltonburg, run water down across that prairie. They had a big dam up there on the Pishapaw River, and I've actually seen the water run in the ditches down across the prairie. But that wasn't enough. Nobody wasn't able to make a living at that. So that went under, and the people moved away to get jobs to make a living.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't exist anymore. It was around the 1930s, 1940s. People just had enough with lack of irrigation, the drought, the Great Depression, the Dust Bowl. You know, times were very, very hard there. And again, you know, because of the environment, you know, there weren't a whole lot of houses built out of lumber. It's more of the dugouts. I think because there's just a lack of resources, that's why there aren't any permanent structures there, as opposed to Deerfield, where we have, you know, 2-3 buildings that are intact. You can tell what they used to be, whereas the dry, nothing survived.
So what would you say to someone who looks out at that barren, empty land in Southeast Colorado and calls the dry a failure?
Yeah, it's a great question. I guess it means, you know, what makes something a failure or not? That people came here, they tried to make the land better, right? They tried to improve it, but just because of extenuating factors outside of their control, they weren't able to do that. So I think calling it a failure is a little too harsh. But at the same time, and we see this as evident in Alice, that the drive produced intelligent, resilient, smart individuals. And so in that sense, you know, it's definitely not a failure, because it's still relevant to talk about, and it's still relevant to show the ingenuity of these individuals.
I love that, Dexter, because I grew up here. I didn't know about Deerfield till I was older. But I have a one-year-old son who's going to learn Colorado history, and his experience will always include, the dry will always be part of that. Like, he will never not know the story of homesteading in Colorado in particular, that includes all of these different kinds of stories. And I just wonder, what is a story like the dry mean to you as someone that studies this?
Yeah, I mean, it means everything, because too often, because of white supremacy, the stories of the Black experience have either just been completely like discredited or erased. And so even out here, you know, we talk about early Black pioneers and fur trappers, and people are like, what? Like, you guys were out here then? And it's like, yeah, like,
right.
we've been here for a long time, and we've been doing really big, important things, such as the farming community of Deerfield, of the dry, where, like, we've actually been, you know, working the land and doing things, you know? So it's important to carry that and to keep reminding people that, like, no, like, we were out here farming too. Like, it's not a new thing that Black people are in Colorado, you know? And so that's been really important to just show the full spectrum of the Black experience here in the West.
I think that's so important too, because we have this longtime narrative of this picture of the West. And so mm-hmm. often it excludes Black folks, homesteaders, cowboys, like you said, fur trappers. You know what I mean? Black folks were part of this story all along. And it's for so long been sort of cut out of the picture. But now we get to put that picture back in and say, this is the full picture. This is, you know what I mean? This is the West. I mean, I know, I don't know if folks can tell from your accent, but you're not from Colorado. Oklahoma, which is...
Right.
Has a similar story, I think, when folks think about Oklahoma. And it's just really cool that you get to create a new version of history that's more reflective of what actually happened.
Well, no, thank you all so much for your time for this. This has been great. I mean, I feel like everyone in this room really, really understands and values the importance of preserving and promoting just our history. So thank you all for your time and for coming up here.
Yeah. Well, we're pleased that you're interested and concerned and doing some valuable work. So,
yeah, no, this is definitely one of the stories that, you know, one of the ones I want to shout from the rooftop, is trying to find the best way to do that, is to make sure that, you know, it's lasting, it's intentional.
Well, Dexter Nelson II, thank you so much for sharing this story.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Find more amazing stories and history and people like Alice McDonald on the Black History Trail in the new History Colorado app. It's out now, and you can download it wherever you get your mobile apps. And here's what else Denverites are talking about. 2 days after East High School and other schools across the state shut down in response to hoax phone calls about active shooters, Denver Public Library shut down all branches across the city yesterday. They reported receiving an unspecified threat on Tuesday night. Denver Post reports that the FBI was aware of the string of hoax active shooter calls earlier in the week. It's unclear if the DPL calls were part of the same incident, so we're going to keep an eye on this as it develops. And finally, pizza. Denver's never really had a great reputation when it comes to pizza. just check out the Yelp reviews of like any pizza joint in town. There's inevitably that one transplant who claims they can't find good pizza anywhere. Well, CityCast Denver is on the case and we need your help. We're finally, definitively, and conclusively taking on the question of Denver pizza. So we need all your hottest pizza takes. Where's Denver's best pizza? Is there a Denver-style pizza? What's the most overrated pizza place in town? Leave us a voicemail with your name and neighborhood, and you might hear your pizza take on the show next week. Our number is 720-500-5418. That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. We use some additional music in this episode from Jason Shaw, thanks to Creative Commons license. You also heard clips from two oral histories from the History Colorado collection. The new one Dexter made with Alice McDonald, but also a clip from one made decades ago with Alice's mother, Roland Craig. If you enjoyed the show, why not take a minute to tell George Swink's grandkids about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See ya! It's when you feel like a robot. You're like, oh, sorry, I malfunctioned. Excuse me, I just made up two words.